Today we're going to begin a new series of study on Sunday morning. We're going to study the apostles of Jesus. I think in all the years I've been preaching, and I've been preaching since 1969, I don't think I've ever preached a series on the apostles of Jesus. I can't say all the reasons for that, but I know one is that for some of them, we seem to know very little about them. Now, certainly that wasn't true in the case of Jesus. He knew them intimately. He knew them well. It's also not true of the early church. The church knew these men. They were their leaders. They were the ones they looked to as those who had brought the gospel to them. But with the passage of time, a great deal of information about them has disappeared. And so we don't know as much as we would like to about them. This past week, I was helping someone up at Sunset, Bill Powers, who helps oversee our satellite school program. His sister has gotten involved in genealogy, and she's been doing research on their family tree. And there's now a very large place on the internet where you can go and, paying a not very modest sum of money, can get their help to do a lot of this research. And she had done that, and then she had sent the information to her brother by email for him to look at. But what I was struck by, and I'm reminded over and over again, even as they're just trying to research their family tree, while they found the names of some people in their ancestry, they knew nothing about them. Perhaps they only knew that they were married to someone else in the family. Or perhaps they only know that they were the parent of someone else in the family. But they can't even so much as find out when they were born or when they died or where they came from or where they lived. And that's only talking about people who maybe lived 50 or 100 years ago. Imagine the challenges of trying to learn more about someone who lived 2,000 years ago. Before computers, before printing presses, before courthouses and record books that were kept of people's births and deaths and tax rolls and all of those kind of things. That's some of the challenges we face when we talk about not just the apostles, but anyone in the Bible. And yet we have actually more information available to us than we might realize. And we'll try to share some of that with you, and especially share with you what the Scriptures themselves tell us about these people and what it's reasonable to conclude from that. If we think about it for a minute, our faith actually rest on the apostles. Now, first we may say, well, I believe in Jesus because he was the Son of God. How do you know that? Because of the records left by the apostles. Well, I believe in him because he did miracles. How do you know he did miracles? Well, because Matthew and Mark and Luke and John wrote down the miracles he did. Now, two of those aren't apostles, but they were connected to apostles. Mark was a nephew, apparently, or near kinsman at least, of Peter, one of the apostles. Luke was a constant traveling companion of another of the later apostles, the Apostle Paul. Not one of the original 12, but still one of the apostles. The teachings of Jesus have influenced many people to become disciples of his. But again, those teachings have been recorded for us by these disciples of Jesus. So really, it's true what the Scriptures say, and we'll return to this Scripture later on in the lesson. It says that the church is built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. So in this series, which we're going to be calling 12 Who Dared, that's not very original, but I thought it was pretty catchy anyway, 12 Who Dared, we're going to talk about these men who dared to follow Jesus, who dared to live out his teachings in their lives, who dared to do what he told them to do in going into all the world and preaching the gospel to every creature, who dared to be more than they would have ever been except for Jesus. So who are these men? What does the Bible tell us about them? What does history tell us about them? Well, we've already heard their names. Don read that to us It's recorded several times in the Scriptures. The passage there in Matthew chapter 10 is one of those places. Here in Matthew chapter 10, verses 1 through 4, Jesus has called His disciples to Him, and out of this larger group of people who were following Him, He selects 12, whom He designates by the special term apostles. Now, next week, we'll probably deal in more detail with both of these descriptions, disciple and apostle. But basically, a disciple meant a learner, a follower of someone. An apostle meant someone who had been appointed to a task and sent out to accomplish it. So, disciple tended to emphasize people coming to Jesus. Apostle tended to emphasize Him sending them out. And that's exactly what's happening here in Matthew 10. He called His 12 disciples to Him and gave them authority, which means power, to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who have leprosy. Drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely you give. Do not take along any gold or silver or copper in your belts. Take no bag for the journey or extra tunic or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worth his keep. Notice how He calls them to Himself because they were His disciples. He designates them as apostles, His representatives, to go out with the same message He had. And then He sends them out as apostles. So what do we know about these men? Just briefly to start with, we might notice, even as they're being named here, clearly some of them are related to each other, brothers even. We don't know why exactly or how exactly Jesus came to choose these specific men, but as we look at them, we notice the very first one, it says Simon and his brother Andrew. Now, we meet these men earlier, along with the next two that are named, back earlier in Matthew's record. At the end of Matthew chapter 4, it says in verse 18, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, He saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow Me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once they left their nets and followed Him. And going on from there, He saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed Him. So, the first four men named in our list were brothers. Not all four of them brothers, but Simon and Andrew were brothers, and then James and John were brothers. And it seems clear they knew each other before Jesus met them. And they were all four fishermen. Now, does it seem kind of strange to you that Jesus was called such, shall we use the word ordinary men to follow Him? You know, being fishermen was an honorable profession in their day, but it was a very humble profession. It's not what the middle class folks did. It's not what the upper class folks did. The middle class folks were business people in terms of being merchants and tradesmen and so forth. Being fisherman was a definitely blue-collar job. But when we think about it for a moment, Jesus himself was blue-collar, wasn't he? If we understand by blue-collar, just meaning from the world's perspective, just a very ordinary person. A carpenter by trade. Comes from a very ordinary, lowly family in a very small town. And he calls these men to be his disciples. It's interesting that Matthew tells us there in chapter 4 that Jesus calls them to be his disciples while they were fishing. Because if we go over to John, one of these four men, John's gospel in John chapter 1, John actually tells us Jesus had met them earlier and had told them earlier to follow him. We don't know, you know, this is part of the missing record, not that part of the Bible is missing, but just part of our information is missing, about when Jesus met these men in John chapter 1, Jesus had gone to John the Baptizer down along the Jordan River to be baptized. And while he is there, he meets these men who are there also learning from John. That tells us more than we might at first realize about them. They already were interested in the coming of Christ. They didn't know who he was, but they're interested in him because they're following John. And John had this message that people needed to repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of their sins and prepare for the coming Messiah. And here are these men following John. And if we turn to John chapter 1, it says in verse 35, talking about this other John, John the Baptizer, it says in John 1:35, the next day John was there again with two of his disciples. And when he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." Now, anthropologists are historians who knows a lot more than I do about how Jewish people practice their faith and their religion and how things worked in their society and so forth, tell us that the traditional way for a person to start following a religious teacher was for this disciple to be to ask the rabbi if they can follow him. The rabbi wouldn't call his disciples. They would ask the teacher. That's what's just happened here. Two disciples of John the Baptizer turn and follow Jesus at John the Baptizer's urging. And when Jesus turns and sees them behind him, walking along behind him, he asks them, "What do you want?" He opens the door for them to make the request. And they said, "Rabbi, where are you staying?" Because the practice among them at that time was if you were going to be a true disciple of a rabbi, you went wherever he went, you stayed wherever he stayed, you ate whatever he ate, you were his shadow 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so they basically were asking Jesus, "Where are you staying?" That's their way of saying, "We want to follow you." And he said, "Come and see." He responded positively to what they're asking. So they went and saw where he was staying and spent that day with him. It was about the 10th hour. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." Then he brought Simon to Jesus, who looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which translated means Peter. So we see these men were originally learners, disciples, it actually said, of John the Baptizer. But when John tells them, not just that they need to get ready for the coming of the Messiah, but when he tells them there he is, they turn from following John and start following Jesus. So that's Peter and Andrew. We also discover that in that same story in John chapter 1, that the next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. He finds Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth," Nathanael asked, "can anything good come from there?" And Philip said, "Come and see." So already we're seeing some of the cast of characters gathering here. And this is all happening down where John the Baptist is baptizing. When we get to Matthew chapter 4, where we read a few moments ago, we're back up in Galilee now. So the events of John 1 have already happened. Jesus has gone back up into Galilee. And it's sort of like these men are on hold. They're waiting for Jesus' signal that the actual discipling process will begin. So it's they go back to their regular routine, which for Peter and Andrew, James and John, at least, was fishing. We're not sure what Nathanael, or also called Bartholomew, and Philip did for a living, but they also were from the same town that Peter and Andrew was from, up on a little town on the north end of the Sea of Galilee called Bethsaida. So they were apparently acquaintances, maybe even good friends of each other, before Jesus ever meets any of them. So some of these men are fishermen. Some of them are friends of each other. Some of them are brothers to each other. Some of them were disciples of John the Baptist. As we keep looking at this list there in Matthew chapter 10, we not only have Simon and his brother Andrew, James and his brother John, we have these two, Philip and Bartholomew, though they are, we don't have any indication they're kin to each other. They seem to be friends of each other because Philip immediately goes and finds Nathanael or Bartholomew and tells him, "We found the Messiah." So that's usually what you do with only friends, not total strangers. But then it keeps on with the list and it mentions Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector. Now we don't know what Thomas did for a living. We know so very little about him in the scriptures themselves. It probably wouldn't be fair to conclude that he's a tax collector like Matthew was, but we do know this about Matthew. He is the writer of this first gospel that we're reading in right now. And in Matthew chapter 9, just the chapter before this one, Matthew 9 and 9, we read where Jesus actually calls Matthew to be a disciple of his while Matthew's working at his tax collecting business. He was at a booth that was set up probably along the side of the road to collect customs as merchants would go along that road carrying out their business. It was just a part of the routine of that day and time. They had to stop at the customs booth and the tax collector or collectors would examine what they had. They would assign a value to it or perhaps ask the merchant what the value was, and then a certain amount would be collected for them to continue on down that road. So like toll roads, and it was based on what you were carrying, not just the fact you were there. So that's Matthew, even though we don't know much about Thomas. And then it says James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus. Now we'll eventually, I think, learn in another place when we get to these two men that they're brothers, even though it doesn't say that here. They're also brothers. So that's three sets of brothers already out of the 12. Simon the Zealot, that seems kind of a strange thing to say. Today, maybe we'd say Simon the Radical. This guy was a political activist. He was a part of a secret society that wasn't so secret, that was sworn to get rid of the Romans who ruled over the Jewish people. And some of those people, within that secret society at least, were known to have committed acts of terrorism, assassination, murder, robbery, to carry out their mean to carry out their objectives. Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot. Iscariot means that he is from a village by a similar name. That, at least that's what we believe about him. It doesn't ever say it's Judas son of Iscariot, which would be his father then, but rather Judas of Iscariot. So Jesus has assembled his team here, so to speak, and they're part of a very humble group, at least, very humble in their origins and in their background, fishermen. One of them, at least, is a tax collector, which means he's been working for the government, probably of Herod the king, and indirectly then for the Roman government. Of all of them, he probably was the wealthiest as a result. But here's another member of Jesus' team, who is a member of this secret society who's committed to Jewish freedom. I just wonder if for a long time, if when they gathered around the campfire, if Simon didn't sit as far that way as he could and Matthew sat as far as he could that way. Simon wouldn't have liked Matthew to start with. And Matthew had very good reason to be afraid of Simon, because one of the groups of people that the zealots attacked were the tax collectors, with robbery and assassination. And yet Jesus brings both of these men together, with them committed to following him more than they care than them being committed to carrying out their own personal agendas. And then Judas Iscariot, which we again, like Thomas, know almost nothing about, except Jesus has called him to be his disciple. And they have been called to follow Jesus, to learn from him, and to imitate him. That was the whole idea of discipleship. I hope we can come to appreciate, first of all, how great their transformation will be. As we look at these men, we will see them transformed by Jesus. I hope we'll also come to appreciate how great their contribution has been to our own faith and all of Christian history. And as we will learn about the ones we can, I hope we'll come to appreciate the fact that they, each and every one, will make the supreme sacrifice because of their devotion to Jesus. And that should tell us something then about discipleship for us, that we're to be followers, learners and imitators of Jesus, not just casual bystanders. Jesus had plenty of those. Not just those who will come and occasionally hear a message either from Jesus or about Jesus and then go on their way and nothing changes. But people who want to know what he has to say and who want to incorporate it into their life and into their faith and who want to be what he tells them they need to be. But just like these men also, not just to be personal disciples of Jesus, but also witnesses to others of who he was and teachers of others of what he taught. 12 who dared. And really the question will be at the end, will we dare? Will we dare to follow Jesus like they followed him? They had to do just what our invitation song says or urges us to do, surrender. Simon had to stop being a zealot. He didn't take a day off every once in a while from following Jesus so he could go out and assassinate somebody, then came back. When he became a disciple of Jesus, even though the term zealot stuck on him for the rest of his life probably, he wasn't a zealot anymore. That wasn't as important to him anymore as being a disciple of Jesus. Same way with Matthew the tax collector. The same with us. Whatever our old life was like, it's not there anymore. We are now disciples of Jesus. If there's any way you need to respond to the invitation to be a disciple of Jesus, you can come and let us know how we can help this morning. And you can do that now while we stand up and sing the song.